Hello and welcome to 989-7500. This is Cinema Scoop Newsreel.
Dad! Dad! Hey, Dad! When's the show going to start? Hey, Dad?
Now look, son. This only happens once every couple of hundred years. If you don't pipe down, I will not bring you again. Shut up.
Welcome to Newsreel, a very special edition of Cinema Scoop, featuring news, reviews, and fun. That's right. This is brought to you for the week of January 5th through the 9th of 1987. And in the meantime, I'm on vacation. This is being recorded in late December, actually. But we've got coming up Mac Memories, featuring William Wilde, some reviews of some overrated films, and Disney news. All this and more. Pull up a candy bar and enjoy yourself. Here we go.
Memories.
May 1985.
When Tomac was a little baby, sitting on his mammy's knee, he picked up from the sea, shook his head and said,
sang the immortal stepson of rhythm and blues, Death, Lemon Slice, who was inspired to write his classic story song about the man we honor today, or tonight, or this morning, or, well, whenever the hell it is you're listening to this Malmo.
Paul Mack, the movie maker. Paul Mack, the actor. Paul Mack, the production whiz. Paul Mack, a legend on his own line.
Yes, I was Paul Mack's third grade teacher.
Miss Prunberg, Paul Mack's third grade teacher.
And in 27 years of teaching, that sweet-faced, talented little guy was the biggest pain in the ass I ever had to teach or babysit in all my years.
Miss Prunberg, Paul Mack's third grade teacher.
Yeah, I remember Paul.
Mr. Snapper Flash, owner of a camera store where Paul grew up.
He used to come in here all the time. It was just a kid he was. And he'd just stand there, right in front of the movie cameras, looking at the Aeroflex and the Bell and Howells, and he'd just stand there, looking for hours. If I'd asked him if he needed any help or something, he'd just say, "Fabulous!" or go right on staring for hours. Oh, sometimes he'd just break and eat a sandwich from his lunch bucket, but he'd go right on looking. He was really a funny little guy.
Mr. Flash, like everyone Paul Mack met, couldn't ignore that even at so early an age, Paul Mack was a funny little guy. By the age of 13, Paul was as comfortable with a movie camera in his hands as you and I are with an armed atomic device in ours.
His films won him great acclaim.
I've never seen nothing like it.
His films sure beat the hell out of sitting on a hot stove.
I was too young when the Beatles first came out, so this is the closest thing to seeing them that I'll... What? Oh, wrong movie? I'm sorry. Paul who?
Mr. Max movies are more fun than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick.
Then 2.5 years ago, the exciting world of telephone entertainment called the young schmuck put out a movie maker, and his receiver's been off the hook ever since.
And I know Paul is a great movie maker, and I heard that is his phone thing of his a few times. You know, but mostly I know him as a fellow fanatic.
Mr. Video View, a video game player who knows Paul as a fellow fanatic.
I just said that. You don't have to repeat all this shit, you know?
Mr. Video View, who thinks I shouldn't repeat all this shit.
Yeah, well, anyway, I've spent hours with Paul playing Popeye and Star Wars, and man, I'll tell you, he's really a lot of fun to have around, you know? Like, this is so funny. Like, the time he wanted to freak out this friend of ours, and Paul opened up the back of his Pac-Man machine and got inside, you know, so that when our friend came up to play, he'd see Paul Mack's face on the screen, and it would freak him out, you know? And this is great. And when our friend walked up, and Paul's in there waiting for him, you know, he walks up and he puts in a corner, and the machine went on. All this electricity went through Paul, and the machine sparked, and Paul bounced around inside the machine like a BB in a boxcar, and then he fell out on the floor, and the paramedics came. It was a scream. Really, Paul's really a funny little guy.
So into manhood he grew. Well, he got older anyway. And along the way, he garnered awards for his shorts and his lines. Will you, Bowman? The folks know what I mean. His short films, you know, short subjects and his telephone entertainment line. Which brings us to today. With 2.5 years of movie line under his belt, which makes his pants kind of tight, and films in production, Paul Mack is still going strong. And even as we honor him for doing his 101 tapes, we can be comforted by Paul's vow to go on doing it till he gets it right. Paul Mack, America salutes you. You're really a funny little guy. This has been another Wild production. William Wilde reporting. Thanks for letting me do it in your ear.
Keep listening to CinemaScoop to hear these latest breaking newsreel stories. Elsa Lanchester dies at age 84. My review of an overrated movie. And the premiere of my new short film, Final Destination Unknown. This and more to follow on Newsreel.
You like ice cream, Terry?
Yeah.
Well, Newton has this new frozen yogurt, and it tastes a lot like ice cream, but it's got fewer calories. So we'd like you to sing this song to tell people about it, okay?
Okay. There's something new at a store that's near. Knutson frozen low-fat yogurt now.
All right, Terry, that was terrific. But I want you to pronounce the word Knutson like all the other words that start with an N, like new and near, okay?
Okay. There's something new at a store near. Knutson frozen low-fat yogurt now is here. Knutson in a dish or on a cone. It's not the same as yogurt you've known. Yes, it's a nourishing too. And if you've never tasted it, please do. When people are trying to go, that's Knutson, we say Knutson. That's Knutson frozen yogurt, it's Knutson.
Unbelievable.
Knutson frozen low-fat yogurt. All the goodness of yogurt with an ice creamy taste. It's the dairy best.
Well, hello and welcome to Disney News, a special news feature designed to keep you informed of the ever-growing popularity of the Walt Disney Company. In the news this week, Disney and MCA slug it out for tourists in Florida. Well, the Orlando area is about to become Hollywood East as two Hollywood giants, MCA, that's Universal Pictures, and the Walt Disney Company, butt their heads there. The two Hollywood concerns are scheduled to open competing studio production and tourist complexes catering to the same clientele, filmmakers, and millions of paying customers hungering for tours behind the scenes. MCA, joined by its half-owned affiliate, Cineplex Corporation, announced on December 9th that it would go forward with its studio complex that has been under discussion since 1981. Disney began building a $300 million attraction last year. Universal Studios Florida expects to draw 6 million visitors a year when it opens to the public in 1989. Disney's studio tour, 12 miles down the road, will be just its third attraction, along with the Magic Kingdom and Epcot Center at its 27,400-acre vacation kingdom. Well, Disneyland hasn't made out here because they've got a brand new attraction entitled Star Tours. So buckle up that belt because you're going to need it. That's right, because the next attraction will be Star Tours, a thrill adventure that will take you out of this world. And you're going to have to be securely strapped in for the trip. Replacing Monsanto's Adventure Through Inner Space in Tomorrowland, Star Tours is scheduled to open on January 9th, 1987. And believe me, it's going to knock your socks off. For years, the airlines and the military have trained their pilots without them ever leaving the ground. Well, Disney has now taken that flight simulator concept and expanded it to include 40 passengers per trip. I recently boarded a Star Speeder for a test ride, and it was kind of like going into a huge shoebox with theater seats and a big picture window at one end. Well, we'd heard that it was going to be a simulated space ride, but nothing prepared me for the absolutely realistic sensations of motion and speed. Guided by a rookie pilot, the Star Speeder took us on a galactic journey to the moon of Endor. Not only could we see where we were going through each window, but we can also feel each and every movement during the wild voyage. As our inexperienced pilot struggled for control, the Star Speeder actually twisted, turned, banked to the left, swung to the right, and did just about everything except turn completely upside down. With perfectly synchronized visual scenes, sound effects, and radical movements, I felt like I'd actually been traveling in space. I was amazed, thrilled, and only slightly nauseous. It's a real stomach turner, and you're going to love it. Brand new from Disneyland. It opens January 9th, this Friday, and they're going to have, I understand, a four-day party. That's 60 hours of nonstop brilliance over there, so get your special tickets, but be prepared to stand in like a three-hour line for that puppy. Anyway, it's worth it, though, let me tell you. We've got some Disney trivia here for you. Okay, question number one, what was the original adult admission at the park? And question number two, how old was Walt Disney when Disneyland opened? Well, the original admission was just $1, but the attractions were extra, and Walt was just 53 years old when Disneyland opened in 55.
Hello, Clarence.
Yeah, I was wondering if you have some party wine, like Ripple or something like that.
We got some of the, we don't have the Ripple.
Oh, you don't?
Huh?
You don't have Ripple, how about a nipple? Well, not Ripple, but something like, Sangria.
Yeah, Sangria we got
a lot. Yeah, some of those fruity flavors, those are real nice, you know, real relaxed.
Well, come on in here, you'll find them all.
Now, do you have them by the case, or how would you have them?
We have cases of, Sangria.
I never heard of such a thing, I just thought they had cases of beer.
Well, we got them all. Wherever you come in.
Well, you can't have cases of wine.
We do have one.
Only cases of turpentine. Thanks to you, the little children's league fund is growing enormously.
If you just come in the store, you'll get whatever you need.
Tell me the story of a morning glory, how it winds up reaching for the sun with the dewdrops of rain.
Who am I talking with?
Hello?
What is your name,
Electric Bemis.
Electric what?
Sonny Blake is about to experience another world.
You really don't know how much I appreciate this.
On an unknown road he chose for himself.
Go ahead and look. I don't think you'll like what you see.
Sonny Blake is about to encounter his final destination.
What is wrong with you people?
What are you going to do, Sonny? Kill me?
Paul Mack brings you Final Destination Unknown for a journey that begins at the end.
That's right, Final Destination Unknown. And this is the announcement you've all been waiting for. This is the first official announcement on the premiere of this film. As you may or may not know, the last film we had was in 1984, in January, and the movie line helped very much, well, to promote that film, and it went over really, really good. Now, let me first explain that these films are not full-length feature films. They're short films. They're not professionally made studio films. This is very much compared to a UCLA project or a film school project, which is exactly what it is. The reason why we like to make a big deal about them over here and to premiere them is because we're very proud about these films, and we're anxious to get opinions and your reactions to our work. We're young filmmakers, starving for attention and demanding to be the best in our fields. So remember, we don't have a $1 billion budget on this. As a matter of fact, we had a very small budget, but in fact, it still is a very interesting Twilight Zone type of film. Now, if you like this kind of thing, we're inviting you to come down. It's kind of like a CinemaScoop party where you can get together and meet your friends and stuff or whatever, but it's not just a party. It's going to be a small donation to cover the cost of rental of the room, and we're going to be premiering this officially now on March 13th, 1987. That's Friday the 13th. Of March 1987, Friday evening at the Howard Johnson's Motor Lodge. And the address for that is in North Hollywood, and the exact address is 4222 Vineland Avenue in North Hollywood. That's the Beverly Garland Howard Johnson's Resort Lodge. And we're going to give you a number in February where you can call and order tickets, but in the meantime, we have two screenings available. We have our first premiere screening with all the cast and crew there. Who made the film, and we will have them all stand. And that screening will be at 8 o'clock p.m., and the tickets for that are going to be a $3 donation. And the second screening is at 9:30 p.m., and the tickets for that will be a $1.50 donation, and that will be for March 13th. We're going to be covering this event greatly in February. We're going to have interviews from some of the people that were involved with the film and so forth. And we're going to show another film with it. It's just not going to be that film. The film, by the way, is 27 minutes, but we might show one of my other films with it. So we invite you all to come down and to look for further details on this very special film coming up very soon on this number.
And your last destination will be places unknown.
Let me tell you, not even 3D could save the film I'm about to ridicule right here. The film is, believe it or not, Little Shop of Horrors, and everybody said so many wonderfully fantastic things about it that I just had to go into that theater determined to pick it apart, let me tell you, folks. No, seriously, I'm only doing this to save you all, because when you hear this review, you'll go in not expecting anything and probably come out liking it even more. But that's exactly what happened with me. Now, I went in expecting great things, and I came out fairly, you know, entertained, but not overly impressed, due to the fact that I was hyped about the film. Now, first of all, this is my own personal opinion, and I'm not a big fan of musicals. That's why I really didn't care for the film as a main point. But on the movie line scale, on the CinemaScoop scale from A to Z, we're going to give this film an O for overrated. That's right, folks. Let me tell you, A, first of all, don't overhype a film if it's, you know, for... somebody that's going to see it, because I don't care how good the film is, it's never going to live up to the expectations of that person that's going into the theater to see it for the first time. And B, I personally don't like musicals of any kind. And C, if you're going to make a musical, please, whatever you do, don't make it look like a stage play, because in my opinion, it just doesn't work for a film, and it bores the hell out of me. Now, this film starred Rick Moranis, who's playing Rick Moranis, and Ellen Green. Oh, now that gal really bugged me. Let me tell you something. She was an anorexic, thin thing with a blonde wig, bleach blonde wig, and a dress that was about five sizes too small for the woman. And this obnoxious voice, I mean, just, can we get a bazooka and lose her now, or do we have to do it later? Let me tell you. Now, Steve Martin is interesting in this film, and I think by far the most comical performance was contributed by Mr. Bill Murray, who I hadn't seen really be funnier in any movie, including Ghostbusters. But let me just say that, for the most part, I can recommend this film. It was overall entertaining. I was just led to believe that this was going to be the best thing since buttered milk that I had ever seen in my life, which it was not. So don't go in thinking this film is the greatest thing you've ever seen, because it's really not. It sucks, okay? Literally, folks, I was bored, but I don't know. It's just, it's a matter of opinion. I don't like musicals, and it's very much like a Rocky Horror Picture Show, which is destined to become a cult classic, and I just didn't like this film, I'm very, very sorry to say. Boring, only for the fact that I don't like musicals, and the guy that played the plant's voice, it didn't work for me. A lot of things didn't work for me in this film, but then again, a lot of things did. I was minimally entertained, but that, you know, leaves a bit to be desired, but still. Like I say, a very small recommendation for Little Shop of Horrors, but I can recommend it to people who like uppity, beboppity, jazz-swinging music videos or stage plays with a lot of songs. Just getting across the point that, hey, you're good-looking has to go into a musical number, right? So anyway, go see this film if you like that kind of thing, and I guarantee you'll probably like it now that I've given it such a crappy review. And believe me, folks, I was bored. Yeah, that's right. Anyway, we're getting on with a special story in just a moment about Elsa Lanchester, who was the bride of Frankenstein, right after this. And wasn't that fun? Actress Elsa Lanchester, widow of actor Charles Laughton and famous for roles such as The Monster's Wife and The Bride of Frankenstein, died Friday, December 26th, at the age of 84. Lanchester died of bronchial pneumonia at the motion picture Country Home in Woodland Hills at 4:58 a.m. She had lived in the Los Angeles area and was described as a very, very private person. She had no family or relatives living in Los Angeles, and there will be no services for Elsa Lanchester. And those who knew her always agreed to honor the actress's wish that her life and final days would not be discussed, which is exactly why we're doing that now. And Lanchester's health had been declining for several years. Heart problems had incapacitated her after she suffered two strokes, and the actress was admitted to the hospital on December 17th. She was best known for comic and eccentric roles, and she had been nominated for Oscars for Come to the Stable and Witness for the Prosecution. She also appeared in David Copperfield, The Razor's Edge, Mary Poppins, and Murder by Death, among many others. Anyway, that's going to do it this week for CinemaScoop's newsreel. Stay on the line, because this will repeat momentarily. Bye-bye.